Welcome, everyone, to another day here at The Damage Report. A special day for multiple reasons. The normal special reason on Tuesdays is that we have Nina Turner. But it's especially special when it's Nina Turner's special birthday appearance on The Damage Report. Nina Turner, how's it going?
It's going well, John. Thank you so much for wishing me a happy birthday. Love the Dragon Squad and the TYT family and just so many people from across the country. You know, it's nice to go. You know, sometimes you go on social media, you never know. You know, you get a lot of hate. We know that as progressives.
Yeah.
It's especially nice today to have so much love being poured on me from across the world, actually, I should say. So thanks to everyone who's out there wishing me a happy birthday, especially those who are saying we want many more.
Hopefully, as I would also like to, I thought it went without saying, but I would also like many more birthdays for both you and me. Yes, and you're right. Getting the nice feedback is always good. You never know when you're going to you're just going to tweet some random. Like I tweeted something about how I wish we had sort of like a mandatory period each day, akin to a cultural thing like a siesta, but just to read quietly. Because I never have enough time to read everything I want. And someone responded something like, nobody cares what you think. And I was like, "What? It's first of all, I checked and you're following me. So you care a little bit.
You do care.
But also, I'm just joking about reading, man. Back off a little bit. So anyway, it's always nice when you get a little bit of positive feedback.
It is, John. But you know what? Some people are not satisfied until they have dipped in and said something negative for no reason. Like, it wasn't even like you guys were having a philosophical debate about something.
No.
You know?
I don't know. I don't get it.
They just had to jump in.
Exactly. Now, there can be good reasons to say negative things. I think Nina and I are going to come up with a few through the course of this hour. But we do have a lot that we're going to be talking about on this special birthday episode. We're going to be giving you some updates on COVID and a variety of different forms, actually a variety of different variants. So that'll be fun. We've got one of the world's worst bosses. We've got redistricting in a racially discriminatory fashion. We've got, hey, Devin Nunes has got a new job. That's exciting. How exciting for him. Some Bitcoin people found a way for me to even more hate that whole thing. So that'll be fun. And then near the close of the show, there's this video that's been going around today of this white supremacist being grilled about his relationship history. And that is interesting. But I decided to watch more of the interview it came from than a lot of the people doing the talking about it on Twitter. And I have found even worse stuff in there. So we're going to have that for you to close out the show. But long before that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you want to send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll be reading those as we go. And with all that said, Nina Turner, birthday girl, would you like to talk about some news?
Yes, I sigh because I know we're about to, do our usual. But yes, let's go.
If I had known more ahead of time that it would be your birthday, I would have done a better job of finding some positive news. But unfortunately, we're going to go with what we've got. So,
well, you know what? We can do a do-over. We can reschedule my birthday for next Tuesday, and then you can put a little goodness in.
That's very flexible of you. I appreciate that. So with that, let's jump into this video.
What we've done over the course of time, we've quadrupled the size of our testing plan. We've cut the cost significantly over the past few months. And this effort to ensure insurers you're able to get your tests refunded means 150 million Americans will be able to get free tests.
Complicated though. Why not just make them free and give them out and have them available everywhere?
Should we just send one to every American?
Maybe.
Then what happens if every American has one test? How much does that cost? And then what happens after that?
All I know is that other countries seem to be making them available in greater quantities for less money.
Well, I think we share the same objective, which is to make them less expensive and more accessible, right? Every country is going to do that differently. And I was just noting that, again, our tests go through the FDA approval process. That's not the
So in that video, we're having a bit of audio problems on our side. In that video, you see the press secretary talking about the progress of what the Biden administration is doing on COVID and being asked what I think seems like a reasonable question about why the government isn't just sending out the tests if they're so important and they're a relatively low cost in comparison to other preventive techniques way to stop COVID from spreading. Why don't you just send them out free of charge to everyone? And Jen Psaki did not appear to think that it was a reasonable question and sort of mockingly talked about, well, do you even know how much that would cost? And I don't know, Nina, like, I think that there's been a lot of unfair criticism of the Biden administration's COVID response from right-wingers who are openly advocating for people to get COVID. But that said, I thought it was weird of the press secretary to so mockingly put down an idea that, as we'll get into, some jurisdictions are actually already doing.
Yeah, sure. And I agree with you. And both things can be true at the same time. The fact that right-wingers are going right-wing no matter what, you know, even if the administration is doing some things right. But, you know, Jen Psaki comes off like this quite often. You know, she did the same thing with April Ryan when she was asking about voting rights and also the vice president, that I thought was very arrogant in her response, especially to somebody like April Ryan. And you know all the reasons why a tone in that way to a Black woman can be seen, you know. So she, yeah, I totally agree with you. The way that she responded to that, very defensive and very arrogant. And I think in some ways, whether she knows it or not, she really is validating the feeling of the elites in Washington being very much out of touch. Your job as a press secretary is to really, you know, certainly do the president's bidding, no doubt, but there is a way that you can do it depending on what the question is. I'm not saying be a rollover for anybody. I don't think that that is the role of the press secretary either, but depending on the situation, you got to handle those situations appropriately. And in this case, asking that question is indeed a fair question. This country must do more for us nationally, and it must be more of a leader internationally when it comes to helping other countries that are not as wealthy and fortunate as we are.
Exactly. No, I think you're totally right. And as you said, two things can be true. Like, you know, you can have fair questions, and you can also have, you know, like Ducey's kid continually trying to just score points for Fox News. Like, both That's of those right. things can happen. In this particular case, I don't think it's crazy to send them out to everyone. I'm not saying it's obligatory that they do that, but New Hampshire had a program to do that of providing free rapid tests to people. They eventually ran out. They would need more funding, but it's also a demonstration of that it was a popular program that they did that. Austria, by the way, has started offering free in-home coronavirus self-testing as part of its testing offensive. They have anyone age 15 or over can get test kits for free from pharmacies, up to 5 free tests per person per month. And that certainly would cost something. But if you want to take seriously the idea, you know, that we're going to stop this thing, that is certainly one way to do it. And you know, maybe you have to have a discussion about to how many people, you know, under what circumstances, how many of the tests and all that. But I don't think it should be mocked as an idea. Like, I've experienced this, and I'm sure you travel too. You've experienced this. You want to be responsible around the time, especially when you travel, if you feel like you've been exposed to someone. But those rapid tests in particular can cost up to $200. So sometimes regular people are going to have to make a very difficult call about whether to be financially responsible or public healthily responsible.
That's right, John. I mean, you're there. And it's just another way, not saying that every idea is the way to go, but it is an idea. And as you have laid out, there are examples of it being done both in this country and also abroad. And it is something worth exploring in our collective effort, keyword collective effort, to try to tame COVID. So you're and no, everybody can't afford to get that test. And even people who can barely afford it, you know, they probably could use that $200 for something else. So it's just another tool. I see this idea is just another tool in the arsenal by which we can use to try to stem the tide. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great point. And let's talk a little bit about the Omicron variant. We're now getting a little bit more used to the idea that it is going to spread, and it certainly is. You can see South Africa, one of the first countries it was detected in. You can see their case count going up fairly rapidly in this graphic. And you can see the past peaks that they've been in as well, which actually, based on the look that I did, pretty closely mirror the ones that we had in the United States. Sort of interesting the way that's working. But their cases have very rapidly gone up in just the past few days. Now, in one area there, in Pretoria, researchers at a major hospital complex said that the patients with coronavirus are much less sick than those they've treated before, and that other hospitals are seeing the same trends. And I feel like around the globe, we've sort of been hoping that maybe it'll be the same here, that it's going to spread very rapidly, and that apparently is the case, but that it might be more mild. In Europe, there are early indications that the cases may be comparatively mild as well. In Britain, the government said Monday that the number of Omicron cases there had climbed to 336, 2.5 times as many just last Friday. Denmark had quadrupled their numbers as well. Still comparatively low numbers of cases in comparisons to things like Delta, because it's just beginning to spread. But the hope is that it will be kind of mild. And in advance of that happening here in the U.S., or as it's beginning to happen, we have these conversations about, spreading the test for free. New York is also going to be mandating vaccines for employees at a number of different private businesses, 184,000 businesses, although that will face legal challenges, and we'll have to see if it ever actually goes into effect. But I'm not sure that we've spoken since this whole thing started up with Omicron. Nina, what are you thinking about what you've seen so far?
We definitely have to have the conversation. We know that the virus is going to mutate. The viruses mutate. That's what they do. We are not at a stage yet in this country or in the world where we have, again, the word I'm using is taming of the virus in the same way that we do with the flu. We have to get there. We're not there right now. And the cron, as you know, shorthanding for that, definitely is something that we have to be concerned about and be concerned about it collectively. So I'm really glad that people are taking steps. I know the debate, John, but I think it is worth the debate about whether or not the government should mandate or not. We've had discussions before just overall about mandates themselves, you know, how kids have to have certain vaccines, for example, before they can enter school. You know, should the COVID virus and all of its mutations be part of that type of government mandate or not? But we definitely have to have the conversation, and hopefully we will come to a good answer for that using medicine and science as our guide and not partisan politics as the guide. And it is very unfortunate that it has turned into this just for the sake of it, John. Just flat out, you want it, I don't want it. You're on the red team, I'm on the blue team. And whatever you say, no matter what, you tell me the sky is blue, I will say that it's greenish or bluish just because I don't want to agree with you. And I think that's what's happening with this virus and the conversation that we have around it, which is more than unfortunate, because people are losing their lives and their livelihoods because politicians can't get their stuff. Please fill that in with something stronger together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're gonna be very like cautious with our language. It is a birthday after all.
Yeah.
But yes, yes, you're right. And look, in terms of that conversation you're talking about, I do a lot of like targeted looking at like case counts and stuff like that. I'm one of the few people probably that still does that, but also just sort of absorbing what people are saying. And it really is feeling like, even more so than at previous points in the pandemic, that people are mostly just like, yeah, it's rough, but what's going to be done? I mean, you have more and more of the, you know, the people that for a long time have been like pushing like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, just trying to get their audience totally ready for the fact that they're going to get sick. So don't worry about it. Just take monoclonal antibodies. I mean, what is it? $2,000 a dose or whatever. And so I'm a little bit worried about the resiliency of the population going into what is likely to be another rise in cases during the winter. So we'll have to see, what sort of response, if any, nationally we have to that.
And John, could I make another point on that point? This is another reason why we should have universal health care, that we should have Medicare for all. And if this pandemic does not get us there, which obviously it is not, because some politicians are still dug in on this, I really don't know, you know, to a broader question and discussion as a nation, I really don't know what is going to get us there if something like this doesn't motivate and move the politicians in this country, some of them, because there are others, as we know, on the progressive side who have been fighting for this and continue to champion it. And bigger than politicians, when you have nurses who have been saying this for a very long time, as they have advocated for Medicare for all. But just the fact that crises of this magnitude, I guess is my better point, does not move elected officials to act, and to act with all deliberate speed and with the fierce urgency of now, we have bigger problems that this virus, that this pandemic is just continuously making us aware of.
Yeah. Well, let's go to one last little, I want to do an update, a last little angle in this area. So has Fox actually found a line that the people appearing on their channel can't cross when criticizing the government on COVID? Well, probably not, but maybe. Because Lara Logan's sort of been absent for a while, ever since she said something pretty, I would say, incendiary. In case you didn't see what she said last week, here is a bit of that video.
It's cheap to treat, medicines are available all over the world, and it has death rates that compare very much to seasonal flu. Moment, what you see on Dr. Fauci, this is what people say to me, that he doesn't represent science to them. He represents Joseph Mengele, Dr. Joseph Mengele, the Nazi doctor who did experiments on Jews during the Second World War and in the concentration camps. And I am talking about people all across the world are saying this.
So, Dr. Fauci is Mengele. He is a Nazi who does experiments on people. That seemed like a crazy thing to say, and maybe they agree, because Lara Logan, who had regularly been appearing on the network, seems to be gone since then. She's not done talking in that way on things like Twitter. She's continued to attack Dr. Fauci, retweeting and liking tweets, bashing him as a Nazi. She also blocked the Auschwitz Memorial after the organization condemned her comments. So you know you're on the right side of history when you're doing that. And yet, look, first of all, she could just appear on the show, the network again later today. That's entirely possible. But even if she is gone, I sort of understand why they're not saying anything. They may not want someone like Lara Logan calling Dr. Fauci a literal Nazi, like, war criminal. But they also don't want to make that a standard. Because interestingly, on the same day when Lara Logan made her comments, Tucker Carlson called Dr. Fauci an even shorter version of Benito Mussolini, a fascist leader, authoritarian, a dictator. And the thing is, if you were to come out and be like, Lara Logan has been disciplined for the thing that she said, well, then conceivably that's now a standard that you'd have to apply to other people. And they certainly care about Tucker Carlson only about 1,000 times more than they do Lara Logan. So again, Nina, first of all, it's Lara Logan. Maybe we don't care. I'm trying to get a read on if there are any lines left for Fox News. And we don't yet know. But so far, she hasn't come back on the network.
Yeah, John, your point is well taken. You know, God forbid they challenge their cash, you know, the person that's bringing in the big bucks for the network. So they will have a double standard here, because if they, you know, come after her hard, they will definitely have to come after Tucker, and I don't see them doing that in the foreseeable future. He would have to do something pretty horrendous by their standards, not our standards.
By their standards.
Right, yeah. By their standards for him to be sent to the principal's office and then maybe suspended. So that's far from happening.
Yeah. Well, I've always sort of found this to be an interesting thing, like, you know, socially in government, like, are there any norms that still exist socially? Are there still any social norms? Because, like, Fox last year, most people don't even remember this, they got rid of Trish Regan, supposedly. Like, they're not being very clear about why they did that last year, but supposedly it was after her coronavirus comments, where she had a sidebar graphic saying coronavirus impeachment scam, and she said that Democrats were creating mass hysteria to encourage a market sell-off and sowing fear about the virus, quote, to demonize and destroy the president. So that was back on March 13th, 2020. So that was I think it was like 3 days before TYT went into lockdown mode. So it was very early on in the pandemic. And supposedly, like, the common conception of what happened is that she was benched over that. That would be the most mild thing a person said on Fox the entire day now. Like, they are so much more deranged than that. If you were Trish Regan, how mad would you be that you got thrown under the bus when they're bringing on complete whack job anti-vaxxers on a daily basis now?
Extraordinarily mad, like, as in mad as hell. Mm-hmm. They have really no standard. I think they just making it up as they go along, and it depends on who the person is and what their position is in the universe, how they mete out the punishment. I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, as an external observer, it certainly does. Okay, well, we are going to do a somewhat radical thing. We're going to try to get our audio problems fixed. We're going to be taking an actual hard break. We might be gone for a few minutes, but the show will return, so don't go anywhere. You're going to see like a holding pattern for a bit, but we'll be back with a lot more news after this. But why don't we get back into the news? And I just want to check with the production team. I'm blue in the monitor. I'm not actually blue on the stream, right? I think I'm probably good. Okay. Sometimes you're just blue, you know? Anyway, with that then, why don't we jump back into this thing? We've got updates on someone who already was kind of looking like one of the worst bosses around. This is Vishal Garg of Better.com, who decided to announce mass firings during a Zoom meeting. Take a look.
This is the news that you're going to want to hear, but ultimately it was my decision, and I wanted you to hear from me. It's been a really, really challenging decision to make. This is the second time in my career I'm doing this, and I do not want to do this. The last time I did it, I cried. This time I hope to be stronger. But we are laying off about 15% of the company efficiency and performances and productivity. If you're on this call, you are part of the unlucky
group
that is being laid off. Your employment here is terminated. Effective immediately.
Okay, Nina, we know what companies are like and how they treat the workforce. We're not really generally surprised by much. That is, my heart breaks for 900 people sitting on that call and not knowing until that last minute that, sure, something terrible is going to happen. But everyone on the call is going to experience it. That is absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, he's a coward, clearly. And he was taking all that time to get to the main point because he is a coward and there was no sincerity. You cried? What you crying for? Because you okay. You a multimillionaire, so ain't no need for you to shed tears. He didn't have to do it that way. And also, John, you know, whether or not it's truly about efficiency or just he doesn't give a fill in the blank about his employees, there are packages, you know, severance, all kinds of things this man could have done. But what a heartless way to let employees go. And people always say, especially around this time of year, because we some, you know, I do thank God that we do get some, you know, people do start to think, oh, it's around Christmas. Maybe I should be a little kinder, but it doesn't last. You know, I'm glad for it, but it really doesn't last. So I will say, especially at Christmas time, but people got to eat and pay their bills even beyond Christmas. The man is a coward, flat out.
It would be like, and again, it'd be bad enough. 900 people on a Zoom call. Yeah. Like you got to. Okay, you gotta individually communicate with these people. Like, is that too much to ask? Like, and their response might be, yeah, but we fire so many people. How could we do this? Well, but that's sort of a problem too. I feel like that should be worked on. But to do it in that particular way, and then, as we alluded to in the intro, that's from last week. It gets worse. So eventually, comes out and says at least 250 of those terminated had been effectively stealing from the company by working just 2 hours a day, saying, you guys know that at least 250 of the people terminated were working an average of 2 hours a day while clocking in 8 hours plus a day in the payroll system. They were stealing from you and stealing from our customers who pay the bills that pay our bills. Get educated. When you are a billionaire, do not tell everyone else who's angry about being fired that they need to get educated. Telling people who've been fired that other people were stealing from them is hardly going to make them feel better when they've just lost their job before the holidays. We also have no idea if any of this is true. Now, we know that they like track things like phone calls and stuff like that. So it sounds like they're trying to extrapolate from the invasive privacy violations that they commit how much people are really working. But I don't know that they know, and I don't understand why we would extend any trust or faith towards this organization. And even if it was true, it's still horrendous to do this over Zoom. So I don't see this update as making the situation any better for better.com.
Oh, no, it's called COA. Mm-hmm. That's what he's trying to do. But it's a terrible cover for what, you know, him and the company. He said, hey, this is my decision. He didn't have to do it the way that he did it. He probably didn't even have to do this at all. There are ways to handle these kinds of situations. And, you know, I want to bring in the one and only Dr. Robert Reich, John, in this. And Dr. Robert Reich continues to remind us that the ratio of CEO to worker pay was 21 to 1 in 1965 and 61 to 1 in 1989. Today, it's 351 to 1. Speaking of inflation, wow. So they are full of it, totally full of it. And we shouldn't accept that, John. We should not. Because again, this man, given that he is the boss, given the type of company this is, there is always a way to figure something out and not do this at all. He probably didn't have to do this at all. He certainly didn't have to do it the way that he did it. Yeah. So it's a callous indifference. And he is a flipping coward.
Yeah. And by the way, as you allude to, also incredibly wealthy. I mean, multiple places are saying he could be worth up to $4 to $8 billion.
Yeah, that's, I underestimated him. I thought he was just a multi-millionaire. Yeah. And thank you for letting it be known that he is way up in the stratosphere. Talking about he cried. What about the people who won't be able to pay their bills? What do you think they? He's full of it. Okay. Because it took, okay, John, did you feel any sincerity in that foolishness?
He tried. He tried.
Because he was lying. He was stumbling.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just think about the home he is broadcasting that Zoom out of, what that must look like. By the way, a little bit more information about this individual. So he apparently is reportedly criticized people for not stocking mini fridges with Fiji and Perrier. So that's fun. He once threatened to burn a business partner alive, saying he was going to staple him against an effing wall and burn him alive. That was back in 2019, so, you know, ancient history. He once also sent an email to employees, and I don't even know what to make of this. He says, you are too damn slow. You are a bunch of dumb dolphins. So stop it. Stop it. Stop it right now. You are embarrassing me almost as much as a billionaire calling people dumb dolphins embarrasses me. That last part I added. He actually called his employees dumb. What is your problem with dolphins? And they are intelligent creatures. I don't. Why? It feels like the only people that make huge amounts of money are the most reprehensible individuals in our society sometimes, Nina. It can be very.
Yeah.
It just feels like that.
I know. So, you know, we do have some good people of means. And what I mean by that, they do understand very clearly that the system is rigged and they're using their position and their station. You know, there's a group called Patriotic Millionaires, for example, is one such group. We need more people of those merits and means to, not merit, but of those means to join those groups. But you took the words right out of my mouth, and you took the words right out of my mouth, dumb dolphins. Shows how much he knows. Dolphins are incredibly intelligent creatures. And this particular CEO is showing that he is not. But abusive thing to say, he's a bully.
He's a bully. He's definitely dumber than your average dolphin. And now I kind of want to start a spinoff of the Dragon Squad for aggrieved workers who've been disrespected called the Dumb Dolphin Squad. We'll work on it. We'll make a shirt. By the way, our producers found... So this, like... They are feeling emboldened, the CEOs, coming out of this pandemic. And why wouldn't they be? Here is so Manny Fidel, friend of the show, we've interviewed him before. He shared this advertisement from Creation Organic saying, still looking for that special person. You know the one, actually available, has an open schedule, doesn't cry, is never late, has no excuses, works hard, has no bull s, smiles no matter what. That one. Think you might be the one? We're hiring. Shut up, Creation Organic. Seriously, I'm looking for a boss like that. Like, why? Like, it's like those shirts that are like, I'm with stupid. Why are you insulting your, like, prospective employees right off the bat? I don't get it. I don't get a lot.
And Dad, they're really making a Creation Organics. You know, that sounds like a pretty cool name. They done messed it up for me, John.
I know. They ruined it. I might have gotten a juice there or
right
soap.
Yeah.
I don't know. Over. Or both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, with that, let's jump to something very different. Let's launch into this video.
Today, the Justice Department has filed suit against the state of Texas for violating Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act requires that state voting laws, including laws that draw electoral maps, provide eligible voters with an equal opportunity to participate in the democratic process and elect representatives of their choosing. The complaint we filed today alleges that Texas has violated Section 2 by creating redistricting plans that deny or abridge the rights of Latino and Black voters to vote on account of their race, color, or membership in a language minority group.
So the DOJ has now announced that they're going to do something about at least one of these incredibly gerrymandered new voting maps that's come out, in this case in Texas, because of the clear racially discriminatory impact of the new map. And I want to give you a little bit more information about this. So we're going to jump ahead slightly. They moved from 36 to 38 seats. And as a result of that, that was caused by the population growth, with people of color making up 95% of the growth. So that's why there are more seats. Despite that, they went to majority white areas. They're going to produce congressional districts with white people choosing effectively who is going to represent them. The new maps continue to give Republicans a hold on 25 out of 38 congressional seats, despite the fact that statewide elections in Texas are now a matter of a couple of percentage points. So perhaps not as biased as some of the maps we've seen that are giving Republicans like upwards of 80 to 90% of the representation in literally in states that Biden narrowly won. But what we're seeing there, Nina, is Texas is no longer bound by the Voting Rights Act because they annihilated it. Previously, they would have had to get it pre-cleared because of the obvious history of racism in the state. But now they don't have that. And there's no prohibitions against gerrymandering. And so they're just going to lock in even more. They doubled the number of safe Republican seats. Despite the state moving towards blue, it is now more thoroughly and durably Republican and white.
Yeah, it's called we're going to rig the game no matter what. And we don't care if y'all know it. I mean, this is blatant as hell. I'm glad to see the DOJ stepping in. AG Garland better get ready to work it. He will be working this, him and his team, all over the country as Republicans are doing this in most state legislatures where they are in control. And let me do this public service announcement. And I, John, will continue to say this ad nauseum because it really makes no sense. They did this 10 years ago or, you know, more than 10 years ago now. But they did this in 2010. And they got the repeat after the census in 2020, where in 2021, people have to run on these maps in 2022. We've been to this bad movie before. And what really burns my behind is the fact that the Democrats lifted not nair finger to be forward thinking and looking to really secure, to really work hard to try to win state legislatures. Mm-hmm. Who draw the lines in most states. There are some, you know, supposedly nonpartisan bodies that do it too. But we know by and large, state legislatures get to do this. While Democrats continue to only focus solely most of their energy, their political energy on the Congress and on the presidency, GOP is taking total control. They have just taken over in most state legislatures across this country, and also governor's mansions. You cannot secure democracy itself by not putting the requisite investment and in making sure that we have more than a fighting chance to be a force in state legislatures. And look, both parties do it. Don't get me wrong. So I'm not excusing anybody. Gerrymandering is wrong. But with such technology, it is more of a laser-focused exercise, and it really is putting democracy in jeopardy. There was a little thing called Shelby v. Holder, John. Let me throw that out there, that the Congress should have answered a long time ago. But here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're being super fair by like, or super, I would say, transparent, unbiased by pointing out that the Democrats do it too. Some Republican might come back, a conservative, watch this and be like, yeah, well, the Democrats sometimes do it too. And I would answer that, yeah, and we're asking to ban the entire process, to stop That's Democrats it. From doing it as well. Why aren't you doing that? You're saying That's both right. sides are doing it, but you seem okay with the fact that both sides are doing it. We are not. And and you're right, the Democrats effectively, like 15 years ago, gave up on ever winning a single state legislature seat. But that was, of course, there are failures at multiple levels. So they don't compete in those. So what do you get? You get Republican state legislatures that are going to do these biased maps. you don't fight in the Senate to stop the practice or to actually get people from, like, allow your president to put people on the Supreme Court, as is their right. So then you also get a Republican, a conservative supermajority in the Supreme Court. So our hope right now in covering this is not to, like, convince conservatives that this is happening or it's bad. They know that it's happening and they don't care. They just want power. We're hoping people will put pressure on Democrats to do something about it, because the only other hope is that the DOJ actually goes through with this. And what? That it works its way up through the court system to the Supreme Court, and we're supposed to expect that Amy Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh and all them are going to stop the Republicans from doing this? Okay, maybe. Well, that would be cool, but I don't know why we would be convinced that that was likely to happen.
Long shot, John. I mean, you laying it out. This is going to take up. This is a multi-front conundrum here. And so we have to start paying attention to legislatures, making the requisite investments to make sure that conscious-minded Dems are winning those seats, and that politicians, some of these people can't be shamed, but just to remind us that democracy itself is in peril. One side does this to the extreme. It turns out that voters are not choosing their elected officials. It is the other way around. When I was in the state legislature in Ohio during the last redistricting process, I was there and I voted against those maps for the very reason we're having this discussion right now. And the Congress certainly abdicated its responsibility to correct Shelby v. Holder. And even in this very moment, the For the People Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and doing away with the filibuster, we still doing the dance on that, John. I'm telling you.
Yeah, 100%. And again, like, I guess, okay, it's good. Merrick Garland's actually doing something, but the Democrats still, I know it's so easy to forget it. They control the Senate, like, technically, if the parliamentarian lets them. And they're just allowing it to continue. They're just allowing it to continue. Okay, I wanted to let you all know about one other thing. I'm going to be promoting this for the next couple of weeks. So most of you are probably familiar with Matriarch and Naomi Kantz, friend of the show. It's an organization that aims to get more progressive working class women into office. And so what they're going to be doing next year, so January 29th, they're hosting a full day digital campaign training event for candidates and prospective candidates that might want to run. So they want to train a bunch of people and get them ready for this process so that we can get the best people possible into Congress. They're looking for teachers, nurses, Amazon workers, Starbucks employees, anyone out there working that wants to make a positive change in the system. And so if you are potentially interested in that, then go look up Matriarch. You know, they have a great web presence. You can find out information about that. But what they would really like is fundraising help so that they can hold this event. So what they're trying to do is raise $30,000 to cover the ticket costs of as many women as possible. And what you can do is you can go to secure.actblue.com, and they have matriarch-movement. We'll find a way on our social media that we can send this link out. But if you would like to help to get more progressive working class women into office, Matriarch is going to be doing this, but they do need financial support for that. By the way, we're going to be having Naomi on soon to talk about this more in depth, but that's out there as well. Okay, with that, Nina, you ready to talk some more politics?
Let's go.
Oh, don't be so eager. I'm about to show you a face you're not going to want to see. Let's jump into this video.
I'm David Perdue. I'm running for governor to make sure Stacey Abrams is never governor of Georgia.
That's enough of that. It's a whole ad. It's like 2.5 minutes long. I honestly couldn't stand to watch more than 7 consecutive seconds of David Perdue. But he is going to be running. He wants to be the next governor of Georgia. And what's interesting is that in that intro to the ad, he says he's running to stop Stacey Abrams, who will be running on the Democratic side. He first has to win the primary, though, because they do have an incumbent, Brian Kemp, who's currently holding the seat as a Republican. But Perdue is just jumping right past him. And I get why Perdue would be so confident. I mean, the voters of Georgia just rejected him less than a year ago. I mean, why wouldn't you be all super eager to run again? But interestingly, despite the fact that he is challenging a sitting incumbent, Donald Trump has already endorsed him. And so it is likely that one of the two, Kemp or Perdue, will end up going up against Stacey Abrams. We don't know for sure, but it certainly seems likely. Nina, what do you think about these potential pairings and the fact that Trump is coming down on the side of Perdue?
Well, I'm not surprised that Mr. Trump has injected himself into this race. Perdue better watch out because, you know, he will stab you in the back real quick. That he, you know, hopefully he understands that. But let me go back to just the portion. I'm glad you only played a portion because I couldn't stomach any more of that either. Georgians, this man is not running to make your life better. I mean, did you pick up on that, John?
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, he made it very clear that the reason he is running is to stop Stacey Abrams, not to deal with your quality of life, not to uplift Georgians. Whatever, you know, whatever his agenda may be in terms of the people of the great state of Georgia, he is just running to stop Stacey Abrams. It reminds me of what Senator Mitch McConnell once said, you know, when President Obama in 2000, when he won, he made it very clear that our goal is not to do right by the people, even by their standards, whatever they believe. No. It was to make President Obama a one-term president. I'm having flashbacks to that. So Georgians, you at least deserve somebody, whether you agree with their politics or not, who are running technically to do something to make your life better and not just simply to stop another person. We know that's like the small print, John, right? That's usually the small print. You don't do that in your introductory video.
That's true. I want to be fair, though. I do think it's mainly about stopping Stacey Abrams. I also think, though, to be fair to David Perdue, he probably also wants to use the seat to personally enrich himself. Because that's what he did in the Senate. I mean, the guy is like running for the governor's spot again. He should be in jail. Like, he and Kelly Loeffler spent 2020 trying to personally profit off of secret information they had about the pandemic. And people didn't seem to like it. That's got to have been one of the reasons both of them were thrown out of the Senate. And yet he thinks he can run again. So that seems to be his motivation. But why is Donald Trump supporting him? Is it about Perdue and his record, his knowledge of the issues? I sort of doubt it. I think it comes down to which of the two, Perdue or Kemp, is going to be better for Trump in a very particular area in a couple of years. And to demonstrate this, bear in mind that Perdue spent the latter months of 2020 pushing Trump's lie that the presidential election had been stolen after Trump threatened him with mean tweets. He had said, to fight back, we simply have to be united. Unfortunately, today we are divided, and Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger are to blame. So he's saying Brian Kemp, Republican governor, Raffensperger, Republican secretary of state, betrayed Trump and screwed over the Republicans by not overturning the results of the Georgia election. Presumably, if he had been in charge, or if he's in charge in the future, he would be willing to step in and help Donald Trump to win an election he didn't win. Now, of course, they're missing the fact that even if he'd won Georgia, he still would have lost the election. But anyway, Trump seems to be trying to get allies into key positions so that he can challenge or overturn the results of an election. Even Raffensperger, by the way, who sort of did the right thing last year, this year has been doing complete sham audits of the results of like Fulton County and things like that to try to reassure Trump that he's willing to politicize these elections. So I would just say the stakes between Kemp and Perdue or Abrams are obviously incredibly high. I can imagine them being higher in a governor's battle. But if this is being designed to potentially influence the 2024 presidential election, even more so it's important that Stacey Abrams or a Democrat wins that race. Any other thoughts?
Well, you bring up a very important reminder, John, and never let us forget it, that 99% of what Trump does, all roads lead back to how it edifies him, period. Yeah. you know, and you're right. That's why the endorsement is there. And also I want to thank you for just, you know, reminding me, but that at least Purdue, I guess on the bright side of that video, is being very transparent about his motives.
100%.
Something to be said about knowing who you're dealing with.
Exactly. Most of our job is just trying to make sure everybody knows who we're dealing with.
That's it. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, well, we're going to close out the hour with, you know, this is a terrible birthday present to give to you. But, well, there's a little bit of good news here. You know what? Maybe this will serve. It's the best news we've got today. Let's jump into this. A new trial is now being ordered for Tim Gilbert in Tennessee because of the conditions of the room that the jury in his previous trial we're deliberating in. So let's give you the results. This is absolutely insane. So he had previously been sentenced to 6 years in prison after a conviction on charges of aggravated assault, reckless endangerment, unlawful possession of a weapon, and resisting arrest. Here's the conditions under which the jury deliberated for that. There was a room with a Confederate flag, portraits of Confederate leaders, and a framed letter from the UDC's national leader. Gilbert's lawyers argued that having a room festooned with Confederate memorabilia and maintained by this is the Daughters of the Confederacy, the UDC, implied that the court subscribes to the Confederate principles and that to many, the Confederacy and racism go hand in hand. We're not going to make the case and explain why that is the case, but I believe it to be the case. And so the appeals court ruling said allowing the jury to decide whether Gilbert was innocent or guilty in a room maintained by the United Daughters of the Confederacy exposed the jury to extraneous prejudicial information and violated his constitutional rights to a fair trial conducted by an impartial jury. It's hard to imagine how you can be impartial when you are surrounded by that sort of propaganda. What do you think, Nina?
I mean, the jury was all white. So plus the ambiance, if we want to call it that. Again, I'm trying to stay PG. Of that room, the court made the right decision there. So you're right, little ray of hope here, just a little bit, because this shouldn't have never happened in the first place, John. And I tell you, the more progress we make, it always seems like we have many more miles to go. And that is it. I mean, I definitely know that, but sometimes it just gets to you that justice is certainly never a destination. It is a damn journey, for real.
Yeah, I'd like to have... like this organization.
I mean, were we in the 50s, the 40s, the 30s? I mean, what?
I know.
What year are we in, and what century are we in? You know what I mean? Can we ask that question?
Yeah, that people are still participating in an organization like that. Let alone that they're having this constant presence in a room that a jury is deliberating in. I know, like people have for years been saying, well, you know what? It's just, you know, it takes time, and the old racists die off, and then we're moving in a bit.
They just recycled. No, they don't. Yeah. They never die. You know, I always say evil never sleeps, so good can never take a vacation. That's just bottom line. Every generation is going to produce these same iterations. As much as it pains us to say that, that is true.
I agree. I certainly agree. And we can't take a vacation, but it being your birthday, I hope that you at least have a little bit of fun planned. Any fun activities for the remainder of your day?
A little bit, but I'm serious, John. I have to reschedule my birthday, but I'm going to get a little in. I'm a ya-ya, so I'm going to hug on and kiss on my grandbabies. Nice. So that'll
bring a big
smile to my
That'll
face.
Be awesome.
And my son was my gift in 1989, born two days before me. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Well, I can say you brought a smile to my face and seemingly to a lot of the audience. So as always, Nina Turner, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you have a good one.
Thank you so much. And thanks to the Dragon Squad as well.
Thank you. Everyone at home, thank you for joining us for this first hour. We do still have more news to get to. So we are going to take a short break, but don't go anywhere. If you're on YouTube and Twitch, we got more news coming. Some of the videos we're going to be showing you are absolutely insane. So can't wait. I will see you in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.